from HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 33, recorded Monday, September 18th, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Codesmith Tools, makers of Codesmith, an extensible template-based code generator for .NET. Hansel Minutes listeners get $100 off Codesmith Professional with coupon code HM100 online at codesmithtools.com. Support is also provided by ExceedZip for .NET, which lets you handle zip, tar, and gzip files on FTP servers, in streams, in memory, and more. Now get 20% off any Exceed component or suite just for listening to Hansel Minutes. Go to shrinkster.com/FPT and use the code HM-20-20. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine, online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott and Carl discuss features of Windows Vista release candidate number 1.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin. You're listening to Hansel Minutes. I'm here with Scott Hanselman, as I usually am every week. Hi, Scott.
Hello, sir.
How's Portland, Oregon today?
It is getting a little nippy.
Yeah, a little cold. I feel the same thing in New England.
Yep, but it's all good. We have no floods, hurricanes, tornadoes, or earthquakes yet today.
And I'm sure there's some lovely vistas out there.
There are, in fact. There is a release candidate of a lovely vista just over the West Hills.
Yeah, release candidate.
Are you running Vista?
I tried, and I'm probably going to... The problem was I tried to install it on a RAID stripe, and drivers being what they are, you know, a whole bunch of blogs said that this particular driver worked, and it didn't. So
and
I'm going to go back to installing
it
on a straight disk, I think. But yeah, I am working on it at the moment.
So I went like a putz, like a schmuck, and I went and I installed it just on one kind of big crazy evening on my wife's little cheap $300 Office Depot no name brand.
Nice.
On my own personal have been building it for years, Fry's Electronics, bringing it back to life with a new motherboard every few years machine. And my tablet, and I had enough trouble with those three machines that I stopped before I hit my Media Center PC.
Yeah.
But I got a pretty good view of what's going on because I've got a pretty wide series of computers there, you know.
So what can we tell the people about Vista?
Well, if you're doing anything tricky, funny drivers, funny hardware, anything fancy, you've got about a 50-50 chance of things working. For example, one of the things that I really liked about Windows XP Pro, and this is years ago, and I mean like the very first time I put XP Pro on a machine, I took my old QuickCam Express, my old Logitech QuickCam, and I plugged it in, and it just worked. There were no drivers required because they had included the drivers for this Express Cam automatically.
That's one of the biggest features of Windows is not having to worry about drivers, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, for the big stuff, for the big middle of the bell curve stuff, you're okay.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, that little $3 camera that I got at Goodwill did not work on Vista RC1. But the weird little no-name Taiwanese has no official drivers ThinkGeek $4 cam does work. So something got a little inverted there, not quite sure. When you install Vista the first time, you can run a compatibility check, or you can go online, you can download the compatibility check ahead of time. I think this is really cool because it gives you a checklist of stuff that you ought to do before you do the installation. So you run this advisor, this compatibility advisor, and it says, I really think you ought to uninstall Nero, which was my CD burning software. You might want to think about Nero's the bomb. I was pretty bummed, but remember that everything's changed from a security standpoint, and the driver model has changed. So, Nero 7 did not work. I had to uninstall it. It said to uninstall these couple of drivers. Didn't warn me about my obscure ErgoDex DX1 alternative keyboard. It told me that would work awesome, but told me that my Logitech Quick Cam Express wouldn't. So that, along with a Wacom tablet, 3 removable hard drives, 4 or 5 USB hubs, you know, my QCAT scan, you know, my scanner, my multifunction printer, some stuff worked and some stuff didn't. Now, I know that not everyone's going to have, you know, roughly 15 devices plugged into their machine, but I've got a pretty wide spectrum of devices, and I was surprised, frankly, at the obscure ones that did work and the fairly common ones that didn't. So I would just say, you know, do your best and realize that something's not going to work, at least with RC1.
So we've been discussing this on the regional director mailing list for the last, I don't know, few weeks, ever since RC1 came out, really. And, you know, a lot of RDs are having similar problems, and a lot of people are having problems with drivers. And Microsoft has been coming back with some official answers, and one of them resonated with me today, which was that drivers, you know, are the last thing, the last piece of the puzzle to get put into an OS before it ships. And the driver model is what Microsoft, you know, the OS side of the driver model has to work, and apparently it does. You know, the stuff that they've been testing it with has been stock, you know, SVGA drivers, you know, not a lot of fancy schmancy stuff.
Some of the guys like ATI, though, have had the access to what's called the, you know, the LDDM, the Longhorn driver model, for the better part of a year. And, you know, and those guys like at ATI and NVIDIA are always pumping out new drivers. So, you know, if you're using an ATI or an NVIDIA, which are really the only two, you know, video cards anyone bothers to run anymore, you're probably doing okay. But interestingly enough, the default out-of-the-box ATI drivers had a lousy experience. But I did install the RC1 drivers from ATI's website directly, and I did notice a difference in the smoothness of the glass effect.
Yeah.
But right now, if I play my movies or DVDs or any Windows Media Player video on the secondary monitor, I get 4 frames a second. If I move it over to the primary monitor, I get a fluid 30 frames a second.
Wow. Well, you know, I think the ATI and NVIDIA guys have got their hands full when they go to work in the morning just supporting XP. I mean, their stuff, you know, their mainstream stuff has been losing quality lately.
Well, it just gets so expensive. I mean, why would I buy a $400 video card when I can buy an Xbox 360 for $400?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that I have a 256 meg Radeon 9800 Pro that was the greatest video card that mankind had ever known 4 years ago, and I'm still occasionally in different applications. Like today in iTunes 7, I got a "you're out of video card memory" error.
Interestingly,
in iTunes.
Wow.
I don't think iTunes uses direct draw though. They don't use the new stuff in Vista. Interestingly though, on my wife's cheapo machine with an integrated video card, and I think it has 64 megs of video RAM, I got a video card out of memory error when I tried to launch every single new game, because all of the games in Vista have been rewritten to use the new WPF presentation stuff. So like Solitaire, Spider Solitaire, there's a great new chess game. I mean, they really brought it out for the games. The new games have been totally rewritten. So I went and I ran them all at once.
Huh.
Worked fine on my big system. After 2 of them ran on my wife's machine, it said out of video RAM, falling back to other renderer, which I thought
interesting.
Was interesting.
So how much does your big system have video RAM wise?
256 megs.
It's all right,
a Radeon.
So is that what they're saying is the minimum, or?
I think that there's, well, it depends on what they're saying the minimum
for
is,
glass,
right?
So, I mean, you know?
for glass, I believe the minimum is 128.
Okay.
Because my Toshiba M205 has 64 megs of shared RAM, and it does not run the Aero experience. So you don't get glass. You get what's called a Vista Basic. And there's a couple levels. There's Aero, there's Vista Basic, then there's another Basic that's one step down from that, and then there's Windows Classic, kind of the original. Now, the best way to find out about your system once you've installed Vista is to go to the control panel and go under Performance, Information, and Tools, and you get this thing called the WEI, the Windows Experience Index. And this is basically an index which is the lowest value of your processor, memory, graphics, your gaming specific graphics and your hard drive. So it's the lowest subscore. So on my system, I have an experience of 4.2, and apparently the current max is 5.9. But this is a relative thing, so as new bits of hardware come out, you're going to get bigger and bigger numbers. Hmm. But 5.9 is the current max. So for example, on my system, my hard drive, which is a 7200 RPM Stripe, I'm getting 5.7. On my memory, which is 2 gigs, I'm getting memory operations per second, I get a 4.8. Again, these are all kind of average things. I get a 5.7 for desktop performance, which makes sense because I'm getting really great desktop performance. The dragging is clean. The Aero experience is nice. But it's a Radeon 9800. It's not a great gaming machine. I get a 4.5. Now, all of this is running on a P4 3 gigahertz, which isn't the fastest machine out there right now. So I got a 4.2. Now, my overall score is a 4.2 because your system is only as fast as the slowest part. Right, you can put a really awesome video card in a really crappy machine and it's still not going to help things. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a pretty clever thing. And then as you go to the game section, they'll tell you that this game requires a minimum Windows Experience Index of 2. So then you'll see these experience indexes on games, and this will be a really easy way for people to know whether or not something will work on their system or not.
It's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. It's they really got it right. It's very clever, and then they have a whole section on how you can improve performance. Now, there's a number of really neat things in Vista that are kind of underneath, because a lot of people are wondering, well, why should I bother, right? It's just, it's XP Service Pack 3, you kind of heard some people say.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
But they've really changed some of the internals. They've got this thing called Superfetch. They've really changed the prefetching stuff. If you ever look in your Windows prefetch folder, C:\prefetch, inside there, there's a thing called layout.ini that the loader is keeping track of what files and what directories are being accessed so that the defragmenter can put those directories to the faster part of the hard drive.
Yeah.
And the .pf files are letting you know what DLLs are getting loaded during the course of running an application. So the next time it sees that application run, it can load those DLLs ahead of time.
I really love this feature. I've heard it described as, you know, how many people have a computer that gets slower and slower the more you use it. And the promise of this, anyway, the idea of this Superfetch is that the machine will actually get faster the more you use it because it learns more. It learns what you're essentially loading.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But with Superfetch, it's even more than that. It tries to speed your machine up when you log in. So it's actually going to say, well, he always loads Word and Excel when he logs in. So I'm going to just preload those DLLs ahead of time. So it's personalizing the loader for your system. Now, a lot of people say you should go and delete that folder. That's kind of a stupid thing to do because it's just going to basically reset your fetch data. And since your fetch data is constantly changing anyway, it's arguably becoming customized for you as you go. But
all
you know,
the more reason to have 4 gigs of RAM, Scott.
Well, so that's a really good point. So speaking of RAM, there's a new thing called an EMD, an external memory device, which is a fancy way of using USB drives for something other than moving files around. So you've heard of Ready Boost?
Yeah.
Have you heard about this? Ready Boost is really interesting.
Yeah.
So this has caused a run on USB disks because what Ready Boost is it's basically saying the swap file isn't fast enough for random access. Now, there's a lot of arguments about this on the net, but people don't realize that when your hard drive is fighting, you've got that kind of like one needle. Like, for example, imagine if you had an old record, like a vinyl record, and you wanted to listen to two songs at once. The head and the needle on that record can only move back and forth so fast, and you're going to get skipping. You're not going to get a great experience. So there's a lot of contention. That's why Windows starts up so slow, is because you've got, you know, 85 different programs that are all trying to start up and struggle to get access to the disk. And that's why a lot of services can be delayed in Windows Vista. So basically, they'll defer them towards idle time because you don't need immediate support for infrared, or you don't need immediate support for whatever. So they defer those things. So what Ready Boost does is it says one thing that USB drives are good at that hard drives aren't is really, really fast random access to data. Not sustained, give me this giant file access to data, because you can only get, you know, 17 to 20 megs a second out of an average USB drive when you're doing sustained. But they can give you you know, 3, 4, 5 megs a second totally random from any portion of the memory.
Yeah, now so you're talking about flash drives, not USB hard drives per se.
I apologize. You're absolutely right. USB flash drives. Thank you for that correction.
Yeah.
So with ReadyBoost, you pop in any USB drive, and the very first time Windows sees it, Vista sees it for the first time, it will run some tests on it. And if it sees that it's fast enough, it will say in the autoplay dialog that pops up, do you want to enable this for ReadyBoost? Then you can basically make a custom prefetch folder and files on that system that will load part of these fetching things, you know, the DLLs and the bits of information that need to be loaded ahead of time to make your system more responsive. It'll load that stuff onto the USB drive.
Yeah.
And when it needs it, it'll go there first. So it's basically like a faster, closer, more customized virtual memory.
Mm-hmm.
For the purposes of making the loader faster.
Yeah.
Right? We're not expanding memory. This is not a way of saying, here's a really slow machine with 512 megs. I'm going to give it 4 gigs just by plugging in a flash drive. But it is saying that this machine has small amount of memory and a slow hard drive. What can I put on that machine that's kind of in between memory and hard drive that'll make the user experience faster?
Right.
And you can go and get a Kingston Data Traveler Elite. Is a really good one. There's one called a Steno that's really fast, and a couple others. If you do a Google search for fastest USB drive, there's 3 or 4 that are fast enough.
And I've seen some really big ones out there too. Now they're getting pretty big. I mean, they're getting bigger than 16 gigs. I've seen eight gigs, 16 gigs. Have I seen? I'm trying to remember.
Right now, one of the things that's tricky about these larger drives is that they cheat a little bit. First, they'll tell you that this drive will do 17 megs a second, but a lot of these newer drives are putting 128 megs of really fast flash and the rest slow. So you don't get complete speed across the entire amount of memory that's on the drive.
Mm.
So for some files, you'll get a lot of speed and others you won't. So make sure that you take a look at almost all the big brands have an elite or an advanced version and then the regular version. So there's the Kingston Data Traveler that you can get for a gig for $15 at Fry's.
Yeah.
And then there's the Data Traveler Elite that's going to cost you $40 and you can only find it online.
Hmm.
Almost all of the USB drive manufacturers, the big ones, have these different versions that include the full amount of speed that you can get out of a little drive like this.
Okay.
This has caused a run on people to a run on these drives. Everyone's trying to get this stuff working to see, does it really make your system faster? And the consensus is it does make your system a lot faster, 15 to 20%, they're saying, and,
wow.
and disk IO of regular kind of using stuff. But you have to, it's one of those things that it builds on, right? You load Word once, it's slow. You load it again, it's faster.
Mm.
Now, interestingly, they're talking about building this, Samsung, I guess, is building this into the drive itself with a thing called ReadyDrive, which is really clever. A lot of people think it's stupid, but I think it's really very clever. They're basically putting a big fat chunk of flash on the hard drive itself.
Huh.
Now, they're saying they only want to put 128 megs or 256 megs, but I think we'll see pressure from folks to get at least a gig or so on these drives. And what's interesting about this is it's not the performance that they're looking for, it's the battery life. Because you think about the contention, and you think about how
right.
much time your little laptop has to beat on that drive.
Mm.
If you could get the most of what you're working on coming out of the flash, you could spin down the drive. And they're saying you can get 30, 45 minutes of additional battery life out of your laptop because the OS and kind of the basics are running off of the flash and you're not having to swap around on the drive. And I think that's really clever.
That's pretty slick.
Yeah. So that's an example of the kind of underlying stuff that's happening in Vista to make the experience better. But those are subtle. I mean, how do you tell, you know, your mom, hey, yeah, SuperFetch, ReadyDrive, and ReadyBoost are going to make things better? You know, basically you will say, hey, I see your machine's kind of slow. You got an old Dell laptop. Let me pop this 1 gig drive in. It'll get a little faster. You know,
Scott,
that's about it.
Let's talk about sleeping and hibernation. What's new there?
Yeah, so there's a new thing. There's, you know, we used to have standby and we had hibernation, right?
Yeah, so, and everybody knows not to use standby.
Well, because standby would drain your battery and then the machine would just die.
And
right?
also some weird things happen with drivers when you load back up. I'm taking the advice of several regional directors who've said, always use hibernate. Don't use standby. Because I've noticed strange things happening when I come back from standby.
Well, with the existing driver model in XP, the drivers are actually allowed to say no. They're allowed to say, no, I'm not going to let you hibernate. I'm not going to let you stand by. And then you get into trouble because the drivers have to support that directory directly. So in the new model, not only does Vista take that ability away from the drivers, but they introduce this notion of sleep. And sleep is a simultaneous standby plus hibernation. So we'll save the data to RAM and we'll save it to disk. So if your machine does lose its battery or get turned off, it can still come out of hibernation. So you get the best of both. Hmm. You can close the lid and get the standby style of the Mac kind of close the lid, don't think about it.
Yeah.
You ever see a Windows person close the lid? They never do that. They never just close their laptop and put it in their bag. I'm always jealous of that. I see people in the airports with their Macs. They just close them and they put the, and I'm like, dude, you need to watch the flashing light for 10 minutes.
I'd be afraid of starting a fire, actually, with my laptop.
I always kind of like close the lid and then just watch it. It's like looking at the light on the inside of the refrigerator.
You got to stand and watch it.
Make sure that this thing actually got completely hibernated. Those kind of problems go away.
Well, that's good.
Now, have you installed IE7?
I have.
So did you put on WinFX as well, the new .NET Framework 3.0?
I have.
So you have card spaces. This is what used to be called info card. It's now called card spaces.
Yeah, Richard and I talked to Kim Cameron about this a couple of months ago, I think.
Oh, yeah. Isn't he a cool guy?
Very cool. Yeah,
we
want to have him
back.
He's
got a great blog. It's identityblog.com/IE9.
Yeah, he's come up with his laws of identity. Fabulous.
Right. What's cool about Kim Cameron is that he realizes that card spaces is not son of Passport, right?
Right?
We can't have this kind of Passport thing again. The problem with Passport is that Microsoft was in charge of it.
Yeah.
The nice thing about card spaces is that it's based on standards. It's XML because, the public loves angle brackets, and it works without Microsoft software. It's a great idea, and they're saying it may be the most important thing since cryptography. Which is a pretty bold statement, right? I mean, you can't just come out and say, this is the greatest thing since God talked to Moses and expect people to get in line. But Kim Cameron has actually enabled his PHP-based blog to take info cards. So I actually logged in and left comments on his blog using my info card.
Wow.
So an info card is basically client-side certs with revocation and the ability to have security token services for the masses. Right, I mean, client-side certs have always existed, but not in a format that was very easy to manage or very comfortable.
Right,
and it wasn't very easy to integrate into your browser.
One thing that we clarified right away in that interview was that even though it's info card, which makes you think that like a credit card, like you're carrying a physical card, that's just the name of the technology. It really doesn't have anything to do per se with a card or a fob or anything, although those things could be used.
Yeah, exactly. Future versions of InfoCard will allow you to have a fob as an additional bit of authentication. Because, right, the strongest authentication is what you know and what you have.
Yeah, the RFID tags that are built into my Prius remote control that allow me to lock the door and start the car with a push of a button aren't secure, that anyone can read those with the proper software and a laptop. And there actually have been cases of people stealing Priuses out of parking lots by using laptops and RFID readers. So
yikes. Well, there's a lot of concern about RFID. We should do a talk about that. People are concerned that you could use RFID to create bombs that would target people carrying specific RFID-enabled passports. But that's a whole other show.
Yeah, it's a protocol that says, what's your code? And then they give it to you. It's really not secure at all.
Well, with InfoCard, something like an RFID could be used potentially as a claim.
Right.
InfoCard allows you to say, I'm a website and I have some specific bits of information that I require from you. So you could say, I need your first name, your surname, and your email address. And then you could select a card, which is really just a certificate from your store, from your card space store.
Right. We should call it. We should be calling it card spaces. That's the
right
new name. Sorry.
So you would select your info card from your card space store and then send it to the to the site, in this case, Kim Cameron's weblog is who wanted it from me. He would then go to the security token service, check for revocation, and there's an exchange, and you can go up to his blog at shrinkster/IE9 and get the details about how CardSpace works.
Yep.
You can go and learn about how to install CardSpaces at shrinkster/IEC. Currently, I've got it on my my Windows XP machine, because you can put on WinFX, which is the .NET Framework 3.0, and you can put on IE7, and then you've got it. And of course, you get it automatically with Vista. And the nice thing about CardSpaces is that your users are going to have this. This is something that's going to push out as a high-priority automatic update on Windows Update, probably in November sometime. So people are going to get CardSpaces. And what's cool about it is that you're going to see plugins for Firefox. Mac is going to support this. This is something that people are excited about that has nothing to do with Microsoft. This is about identity 2.0. Putting people in control, potentially just making phishing and theft like that so much more difficult.
Right.
We should do an entire show on card spaces. We can talk about writing your own security token service, self-issued cards. What happens if someone like Visa comes out with an info card service that you can actually get info cards for free? It could be really game-changing. It's huge stuff. That's something that's built into the underlying security infrastructure of Vista and is really exciting.
We should do another show.
Something else that's cool about Vista is the IE7 protected mode. They run IE7 in a mode that is even lower than the weak user that you're running as already.
Yeah.
It's actually kind of useful and annoying because as you're doing stuff in Vista, you'll find buttons and icons that have a little Windows shield on them. So, for example, I went into iTunes 7 yesterday and wanted to deactivate my Audible.com account, and I noticed that the OK button on the deactivate dialog had a Windows shield on it. Then I started realizing that a bunch of the icons for installers, like stuff I wanted to install on my desktop, had this little Windows shield over it too. Hmm. Each time you click on those, you get the user access control prompt. This is the thing where you get the curtain of, the gray curtain of death that covers your desktop and says, you need to OK this. This is meant to warn you when folks do stuff like accessing directories that they shouldn't. Maybe you've got a Trojan on your machine or some kind of attacker is trying to gain access to a directory. One of these would pop up, and this would be your opportunity to say, no, I don't want to allow that.
Yeah.
This is real similar to what the Mac folks see when you're on OS X and something tries to do something. You'll get prompted to enter your password. In this case, you just click on a button in a special modal mode. This is actually a modal dialog that's system-wide mobile, modal rather. It actually takes over everything. So it's running in a different desktop. It's an entirely different context.
I guess the perfect virus for Vista is the one that emulates that dialog, huh?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I know that I've seen a number of websites that can simulate that, but they can't cover the entire desktop, of course.
Yeah, it'd have to be a binary virus.
I believe that there are controls to prevent that, because what's interesting about this modal dialog is that it's running in an entirely different desktop context. It's a whole other user, basically. Like, same thing happens when you're in CardSpace, that programs that are running in your desktop can't access this stuff. You can see it and you can interact with it, but no one else can.
Right.
Now, some of the stuff that my wife was excited about is the family controls that are built into Vista. This is really great stuff. This is kind of the stuff that should have been built into XP, in my opinion, but it's finally available in Vista. This is where you can actually go in and fill out a grid of when Billy can use the computer, what programs he can run, what he can't, what sites he can visit.
Yeah.
You can set time limits on your system.
Wow.
It's really powerful stuff. So if you've got kids and you want to control their access, I wouldn't be afraid to let the niece and nephew play with the computer. You can lock their systems down such that they couldn't hurt themselves, right? You let the kids play with the machine and you show up one day and program files is in the recycle bin. How did you do that? That kind of stuff doesn't happen on Vista because they really locked it down.
I've recently had to deal with this because my four-year-old has recently taken a keen interest in playing video games. So I gave her own XP login. I have her running as a user, and I'm running as administrator. And what I've done is I've just removed items from her start menu, just, remove control panel, remove that, remove this, remove that. And also we keep the computer that she uses in the living room. And so when she's using it, we're in there with her, you know. I think that's probably the first thing parents ought to try is just, you know, spend a little more time with your children.
No, there's a number of get them off the computer.
I don't want to be
solution.
Preachy, but you know.
Sure, I think we'll do a show in the future on running as a limited user. There's a number of ways that you can do this in Windows XP, where you can basically lower your own abilities, give yourself less access. There's tools like Privilege Bar, Priv Bar, Make Me Admin, and different tools like that. You can set it up so a right. DOS prompt will turn red when you're an administrator. We'll do a show on that, on running as limited user. It's a really useful thing. Couple of other things that are cool to check out on Vista is they're really going full court press on with the you know, the mysterious flash URLs. You can go to cwindowsvista.com, and that's one. You can go to innovateonwindowsvista.com, and those are at Stringster/IEL and IEK respectively. They got the guy, a guy from TV, I forget his name. He used to be on a TV show called Picket Fences. They got him to do a whole series of videos where, you know, it's one of these kind of older Tom Selleck mustache guys.
I know that guy. He was in A River Runs Through It. What's that guy's name?
Right. Tom, what's his name?
Tom somebody, yeah.
So that guy.
He did a Leave commercials too.
Exactly. So that guy is telling you about Vista and, you know, has a kind of quiet confidence to let you know that everything is going to be okay.
Yeah. If you don't do it, I'm going to kick your
ass. Tom Skerritt.
That's it.
So they got Tom Skerritt going through this, and there's a whole flash thing. But they do give you an idea of really what's changed. I mean, once you kind of cut through the cheese,
They
can get an idea of what's changed. Now, for our developer audience, the folks who really want to see what's changed, what's the best way to find out? Well, from my point of view, it's to see what's broken, right? What did they break on purpose? So take a look at the application compatibility stuff on Vista. This is at Shrinkster/IEM. And this is a list of the things that they've changed that will affect your application in high, medium, and low priority with details on, you know, we changed the way WM Paint works and you should know because of this. It's that level of detail. And that provided me a lot more value than things like Paul Thoreau's Vista site at Shrinkster/IEG that just tells you what's new. I want to know what's busted, what's fundamentally different. Because for me, I can't use FinePrint, my favorite printer driver, my multifunction printer. I can't get it to share, even to other Vista machines.
Yeah.
I can't get my Wacom tablet to work. You know, these things aren't killing me, but they are a little frustrating, and I'd like to know why. You can dig into that at the in the MSDN library, finding out what they've actually changed in Vista, and get your apps ready to work in Vista.
Now, speaking about the developer audience, I've noticed a few things written down in your notes here about the .NET Framework 3.0 and Windows Workflow Screencast. What is that doing?
List? You know, so .NET Framework 3.0 is on Vista by default, so you get Indigo, right, the Windows Communication Framework.
Right.
You get the Windows Presentation stuff. This is XAML, right? We'll do a show on XAML. Maybe we'll get Chriselles to talk to us about that because he's got a book on that. You've got then you've got Windows Workflow. So this is an in-process workflow. I think we'll do a whole show on that. Someone out there should be keeping track of these shows. We'll do. Windows Workflow is really exciting. This is an in-process workflow application that allows. It's basically like, you know, Tiny BizTalk lets you describe in a very clean XML format a series of workflows and activities. You can write your own activities.
Yes.
And then bring this up inside your applications. You can also do long-running workflows. So someone could say send an email and then, you know, dehydrate this workflow and wait for someone to come back, and then we'll start the workflow back up once they've approved something via email. Really cool stuff. That's built in. You have that automatically.
And what's the Shrinkster for those screencasts?
Yes. Sorry about that. So the Windows Workflow screencasts are really nice. They're at Shrinkster/IEA. All that stuff's up at netfx3.com, and this is the kind of the .NET Framework 3 developer site that you should definitely take a look at.
I also want to mention that on DNR TV, I did a whole four-part series on Windows Workflow Foundation with Michael Stiefel. And you can see episode one at shrinkster.com/IEP, or you can go to dnrtv.com and just go to the archives and check it out. There's four, I think it's something, almost 5 hours of workflow interview-style videos.
That's fantastic. I'm digging the DNR TV stuff. Now, a couple of people have been saying that Vista is just a ripoff of Mac OS X, OS X. So if you think that's the case, take a look at Shrinkster/IEJ. there's a, basically a feature-by-feature comparison, because some of the new stuff in the next version of the macOS, codenamed Leopard, will let you go back in time and do, you know, file versions, see the previous version of a file. Stuff like that exists in Vista as well. So you can actually look at a file and say, I want to see previous versions of this. This is actually pretty creepy.
That's
actually, I just right-clicked on my notes for Hansel Minutes, and I hit properties, and this is the same properties dialog you're used to seeing, except this one says general, security, details, and then it says previous versions. These are saved automatically, and I can see yesterday's version, and I can then open that version and go back in time and then see what is in that version. It's a little bizarre. I'm going to dig into kind of the details where that stuff goes, but that's basically hidden on my local hard drive in a special folder with you know, my name and a date timestamp about when it was saved. The same kind of feature is going to be in OS X. Basically, they're squirreling away versions of stuff as you go.
You know, my reaction to that is a visceral reaction is, oh my God, you know, a waste of disk space. But no, disk space has become ridiculously cheap. I think I can get a 320 gig hard drive now for $99. 320 gigs for $99.
I was at Office Depot yesterday and just about bought the Western Digital MyBook. It was $199 for half a terabyte.
500 gigs.
Yeah, I'm sick about it. I should have gone back.
We actually use those here to archive old versions of DNR and Hansel Minutes.
Now,
and
people will complain and they'll say that, well, I want, you know, Vista to respect my disk space. And you can turn all these features off. You can tell it that. But just to give you an idea of how much Vista understands that disk space is cheap, it actually takes your entire program files, documents and settings, and Windows folder and saves it off during an upgrade.
Wow.
So if you want to uninstall Vista, it'll put it back exactly as you had it before by bringing all those folders back exactly where they were.
Hmm.
So, you know, that was a little surprising to me when I opened up my hard drive yesterday and had only 10 gigs free on an 80 gig drive. And then I realized that, you know, 16 gigs was squirreled off into the, in the corner there.
But it's crazy if you think about that, they're not, that they don't do that. They'd be crazy for not, because how many times have you seen you've got a 200 gigs free on your hard drive or whatever, right? And then, you see this README file or a to-do list from last month that had a few phone numbers in it you don't recognize. And what do? You delete it, right? You delete it. And it's like, well, you have 200 gigs free. There may be that phone number that you may need to go back sometime. You don't need it now, but why are you deleting it? You know?
Well, one of the things that does bother me about this, and I think is this is just an ongoing issue about computers in general, is be aware of where your stuff is, right? The fact that there are shadow copies now means that if you're stupid enough to put your social security number in a text file, that social security number exists in a number of places now.
Yeah.
You know, it's being automatically backed up, or it's going here, it's going there. So let's rattle off a couple of things that are built into Vista that they don't do a good job of advertising. I like the redesign of the start menu, but there's so much stuff.
Yeah, there's lots of hidden
in the
stuff.
System. Well, you know, it's hidden and useful.
Yeah.
For example, they've included sticky notes and all the gadgets. You can have like sticky post-it notes on the screen. They've got a fantastic new Windows speech recognition engine that lets you drive the entire OS via voice.
Wow.
Buried two levels deep down in accessories. They've got a new snipping tool that lets you do screenshots by just drawing where you want the screenshot, because all the tablet PC stuff's built in.
Nice.
The new sync center, the new Windows sidebar, like we talked about the gadgets. You've got a backup tool that's built in now. You can do complete system backups. There's a new thing called Windows Easy Transfer that lets you install a clean version of Windows and then take another machine and hook the two up and have your files and information move over from the old machine, for making upgrades just that much easier.
Wow.
There's features to run Internet Explorer with no add-ons, so you can basically run a clean IE. Windows DVD Maker. All this stuff is buried in the menus, and I don't know how they're going to get that stuff really out so people can use it. There's so much cool stuff going on, but there's so much stuff going on. Mm. And I don't think that the start menu is doing a great job of letting people know about this stuff. And there's yet another program to search, to look at your images. You've got the Windows Photo Gallery. Yeah. So it's going to be a little confusing.
Speaking of the start menu, Where did the start run go?
So when you click on the start menu, you now get a text box right at the bottom that says enter search or start search. That is the run dialog. So yeah. What is the search? It is the run. As you start typing, like if I type in calc and then just let go of the keyboard, I see that the calculator pops up. I see programs, calculator, files, everything that has calculator in it, and then emails that have the word calculator in it.
Yeah.
Or I could just hit enter and it would work exactly as the start run menu would have worked. One thing that's nice, though, is because this search is built in, you can save these searches. I can go and say search all, come into Windows Explorer, and then say save search. And that'll appear as a saved search with a .search-ms folder, and I can tag that search and keep it in my favorites. So basically, you can make virtual folders that are saved searches. Right. If you have a project that spans many folders, you want to say anything with Carl Franklin's name in it, I want to have a virtual folder that has all that stuff. A lot like you do search folders in Outlook.
Now, this was going to be part of WinFS, wasn't it?
Well, so WinFS is gone, right? This was the metadata database and is replaced with the Windows desktop search component, which is basically a more hardened, built into the OS, system-wide search index. It's indexing server and Windows desktop search. Support for iFilters built into the OS and turned on by default.
All right, so it does give us essentially the features that we were looking for in WinFS, but isn't architecturally the same, right?
Yeah, it gives you the same general experience, exactly. Everything is indexed, it's constantly running, and it allows you to do different things, like here I've clicked on my documents, I can now go to views, and I can say I want to... view by, sort by, that's stuff we're used to. But I can also say stack by. I could say stack by size. So now I'm going to get virtual folders that say, here are all the files between a meg and 16 megs. And that's a virtual stack.
Yeah.
I can then go into that and see just those files. And it is that indexing service that makes that possible.
Wow, cool. Very cool.
A lot of multi-threading. One thing that you'll notice right away is that they do everything they can to make the UI responsive. Get you something right off the bat. And then they'll go back later and do things like updating the thumbnails and, give you an, you can scroll quickly. And then as you stop, the thumbnails will start to flow into the system.
There's nothing like writing multi-threaded apps in a managed code. There's just, it's so much easier than doing it the old
way.
No,
I don't know if I don't think the Explorer is managed code, but I would have to run Process Explorer and check it out. But they're doing something right because it is much more responsive moving around Explorer, but it's very confusing. They've changed the left-hand side. It's not just a folder tree hierarchy anymore. Oh, hey, did you see one other totally unrelated thing that they've got? And this is actually a little old, but I thought it was cool. They've got SimCity, the original SimCity that you can run inside your browser.
No kidding.
You can get this.
With Godzilla and everything.
You can get Shrinkster/IEH. This is up at electronicarts.com, and it's basically the classic SimCity, the one that we played in like high school and junior high, in your browser. You do have to register, but it's free, and you can screw around with it. It might be fun for the kids.
All right, Scott, that's a show. Thank you very much for your insights on Vista.
Thank you.
And we'll see you next week on Hansel Minutes.